Before we begin today's show, we all know and love Scott Van Pelt. He's one of my favorite people at ESPN, absolute legend. So that's why I'm very excited to tell all of our listeners about the brand new SV Pod, his new podcast, where each and every week he'll dive into important sports stories, fun ones, fascinating ones, interesting ones, important ones, and also a little ridiculous nonsense along the way as well. There's a new episode each and every week. So if you're interested, you can subscribe and listen to the SV Pod wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, leave our show a review. If we like it, the great TST might even read it on our next pod. How about that? All right, here's the show. Back in your life on this Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020. Hello again, everyone. I'm Aria Helwani, back in New York City, frigid New York City. Spring is coming. I feel it. I'm excited. Days are getting a little longer. Hope is out there. And there's a lot of hope in the UFC because the face of the UFC is back. The biggest star in the history of the sport is back. The biggest draw in the history of the sport is back. Conor McGregor, as you know by now, victorious Saturday night in Las Vegas, 42nd TKO win over Donald Cowboy Cerrone. It was as one-sided as it could possibly get. I mean, Donald Cerrone didn't land one significant strike. 19-0, he was outstruck, and it was just a whirlwind. And it was exactly what Conor needed to do. The whole week couldn't have gone better, in my opinion. He was on his best behavior. When he was late, he apologized. Press conference, he was early. He was charming. He was endearing. It was back to the old Mystic Mac. He wasn't upset. He wasn't aggressive. He just seemed grateful and happy to be back. And then, of course, he had to perform and get a nice win. He did that. Be magical on the mic. He did that. And now the big question is, who's next? That's part of the fun when you're covering Conor. It's not just the build-up to the fight itself. It's not just the actual fight itself. It's the debate, the speculation as to who is next, when he'll return, what the stakes will be, all that stuff and more. So today on the program, we will discuss all that as we now start to, you know, spin forward as we put 246 behind us. We'll be talking to P.T. Carroll of MMAfighting.com. Host of the Eurobash. He was in Las Vegas covering this fight. It was great to see him back. In my opinion, the best European MMA journalist out there right now, and a man who knows Conor better than anyone, has been covering him long before his UFC debut. So we'll get his thoughts on Saturday, where he goes from here, and in particular, how the Irish fans now feel about Conor as he tries to make up for lost time and get back on track, truly, because one of the stories heading into Saturday was the Irish fans losing faith in him, hope in him, and turning their backs on him, all this stuff and more. Well, how do they feel about him now? We'll get the pulse of the nation from P.T. Carroll. But first, let's say hello to my old pal, New York Rick, who was also in Las Vegas to take it all in for the ESPN MMA social channels, if you will. New York Rick, are you there?
I am here, my friend. How are you?
That wasn't your first Conor fight, right?
It was not my first Conor fight. It was my first Conor fight in this capacity.
Right. You went to 189?
I've been to 189. I went to 205.
Oh, my. Okay.
If you'll recall, I brought
this is when
a young
you
woman
up the...
over Brian Keller
yes.
to UFC 205.
One of your great blunders.
Now, if we're going to pull back the curtain like that, I
sure.
mean, we'll talk about how you took a photo with Brian in, what was it, 2013? Didn't even remember it.
No. It was actually 202. It was before the Diaz fight, so what was
that?
It? 2016. But how is that a blunder on my part? How was I supposed to know he was?
I mean, you were standing in the presence of greatness, and you
yeah.
didn't even know it.
I mean,
I
took the picture. You didn't invite the guy, and he was like giving us battle raps and stuff. It was crazy. He was writing songs about the Rick's Picks Challenge or the Rick's Ticks Challenge.
As was everybody. It was a mania at the time. Anyway, sorry to get us off track. But
no.
Yes, I've been to several Conor McGregor fights. This was the first I was in a working capacity and working for ESPN social handles.
Is Conor McGregor back, or as Stephen A. Smith said and pissed off the world? And by the way,
yeah.
I have no issues with whatever Stephen A. Smith said. I think everyone is you're looking like
dumbasses by complaining about this so much, because if anyone else would have said what he said in MMA, you would have said, all right, cool, yeah, whatever. But because it's him, how dare he talk about mixed martial arts? Whatever. I'll talk about that later if there's time.
Sure.
But do you agree with the notion that, you know, he's not truly back, or did he do enough to, you know, make you believe that he is back?
I believe that Conor is back, and I'll, you know, there's some caveats to that. First, I'll start with, I agree with Stephen A. Smith. Like, we didn't learn anything different about Conor McGregor's game, right? Like, we know Conor McGregor is an elite striker. We know that he has the ability to put people out, and he did that to Cowboy Cerrone. Nothing new there to learn. But what I did learn is that his preparation, his right. mindset, the things that he came into this fight saying and doing were a lot different than the way he came into the Khabib fight, and I believe that Conor McGregor is significantly more dangerous than the Conor McGregor that came into the Khabib fight. That is what I learned. I learned that Conor is focused, training as hard as he's ever trained, and, you know, in his interview with you, he said the training was always good. It wasn't the training that was the problem. It was what he was doing between the training, and I fully believe that between the training now, he is keeping his head on his shoulders, and he is doing what he needs to do. So Conor is back, but I didn't learn anything new about his game. That is the same dangerous guy that took out Eddie Alvarez. That's the same. I didn't learn anything different. He didn't add any new wrinkles. It was too short a fight to understand any of that. But I do believe that the mentality that he had on that rise is back.
And I agree to a degree. But I do feel like one of the big questions was, you know, against Khabib, he looked flat. He didn't look like himself. And so to your point, we did learn that he can return to his old self, his old form, right?
Ariel, his foot was a balloon.
Oh, stop it. And by the, like, for that, again, everything he says is scrutinized, and that's fine, but I'm going to take what he said at face value. He was drinking. He was part, because yeah. I heard all this stuff leading up to the fight, but just never from him, like that he would legit disappear before the fight. Now, Khabib is a better fighter than Conor McGregor. Make no mistake about it. Right now, Khabib is the best in the world, and you can make a strong case that he is pound for pound number one. And you can make a case that he's one of the greatest ever in the history of the UFC. But to me, on Saturday, I saw the old Conor, the way he started the fight, the way he was all week, his demeanor. What did I say to you on the Monday after I came back? And I know this is kind of a weak move, because if you're going to say it, you should say it before the fight. But what did I say to you on the Monday of the fight after I saw him face-to-face in Vegas?
You said that the old Conor was back.
I said less than 2 minutes, right?
And you predicted a very quick finish, yeah.
Very quick, for two reasons. A, because I felt it. I sensed it. He was locked in. I saw him train. I saw him like meditate for an hour. He just sat there on the ground and was just by himself, no one bothering him. He just seemed truly locked in and was doing this for the right reasons, wasn't doing this to shut anyone up or prove anyone wrong, was doing it for himself and his team to prove that he could get back, right? Not for any other reason. I thought that was promising. And also, just like Stephen A. said, Donald Cerrone doesn't show up. And I don't know how you can defend Donald Cerrone in this particular regard. Listen, the guy historically doesn't show up when it's a big fight. And once again, just like the RDA fight, just like every other big fight, he did not show up. And when did I really realize that he wasn't going to show up? When he was at the press conference on Wednesday and he's standing up and slamming the table. You guys don't understand. We're going to blow the roof off this place. That to me was a guy who was trying to convince himself that he was going to show up. That to me was a guy who was trying to convince himself that he was ready for this. He wasn't ready for this. And once again, all he did was reinforce that narrative.
So my question then is, can both those things be true? Can
yeah.
Conor be back? If you're saying Donald Cerrone folded in the way that he did, what does that tell us about Conor McGregor, if anything? Like, it shouldn't tell us anything.
Because he has to be able to exploit that. He has to be able to, you know, rise to the occasion and take advantage of that. And again, I'll say, even though they won't admit it, I do feel like mental warfare was being played. I do think he was disarming him. And that stripped away even more of Cerrone's killer instinct at the press conference, shaking of the hands. And how did he come out? How did he come out?
Yeah, like a bat out of hell.
Right? Cerrone didn't know what hit him.
Yeah.
Look, I've never been hit with shoulder strikes. I don't know what that feels like. I would probably crumble to the ground, right? If someone hit me like that at like 20% of that. But I've asked enough fighters who have told me that should not have had the effect that it had on him. Now, of course, we can't ignore the fact that he lost his last two via TKO, was stopped in his last two, all that stuff and more. He's clearly on the tail end of his career. But for Conor to look that way, to act like that, to have the buildup that he did, to perform that way, I mean, it just, that was a home run of a week. Like, you cannot, to me, you couldn't have scripted that week better for him.
It was the perfect storm. And truth be told, it was the perfect opponent. It did exactly what it needed to do. There were some gripes about who it was or wasn't leading in, but there's no doubt that that was the perfect opponent now in hindsight, with the benefit of hindsight and seeing the talk about Conor McGregor now.
Okay, so like I said, the fun part about it is as we try to move on from 246, this debate, because, you know, we have John Kavanaugh saying, I like Gaethje at 170. We have the Masvidal talk, which is very clear based on the polls that I've done and all that stuff. Very clear that the fans want Masvidal, right? Very, very clear. You have Usman out there. You have Diaz out there. Even Adi just kind of throwing out Aldo, as random as that was. If it was up to you, who are you going with and why?
Masvidal. I'm going with Masvidal. That's the fight. And if you recall many episodes ago, I told you win or lose, I think that's the fight for Conor McGregor, because I don't think that this is a merit-based system when we're talking about Conor McGregor. I don't think he needs to win the fight to get a fight with Masvidal. Fortunately, he did. I think Masvidal is the fight to make win or lose. Now, I will say this. It seems like Masvidal and his team are kind of getting impatient and ready to move on and you know, kind of poo-pooing the talk. And maybe that's a tactic. Maybe that's a tactic to kind of force Conor McGregor's hand. I would argue that you can't force Conor McGregor's hand. He chooses what's going to happen in this scenario. So you're just going to have to wait, as impatient as you're getting. But if that is the case, if all of a sudden Masvidal's team is just sick of waiting and decides that they're going to do something else, I would like to see Nate Diaz versus Conor McGregor. I think that that is the fight that we've been clamoring for, we've been waiting for ever since the second one happened. That is the fight that will always be there. Conor McGregor himself saying that it's always there. You know, Nathan, he's calling him Nathan. And
let's go, brother.
The third one's over there. Number three is there.
Yes.
That is the fight I would like to see. And it doesn't need to be next for me. At some point, before it is all said and done, I need to see Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz. Now would be a fine time to do it, to kind of bridge that gap while Khabib is sorting out his business with Tony. But Masvidal is my number one choice.
I would like to make an announcement. I'm officially moving on from Masvidal McGregor.
Sure.
I
understand.
I'm done with it. Not to say that I don't want it. Not to say that if they announced it today, I wouldn't be, you know, super excited and thinking of all the possibilities, and the buildup would be fun and the buzz would be fun and the fight night would be fun. But I'm moving on from it for several reasons. Number one, the UFC doesn't want it. I mean, Dana White hasn't even gone in that direction. He hasn't even sniffed in that direction. And, you know, worth noting, sometimes he does that and then he, you know, reverses course, but never has he actually let on for a second that he wants that fight. Usman has now finally said, okay, Masvidal's the guy. And most importantly, I feel like Masvidal wants Usman more than McGregor. I feel like for him, winning the belt means a lot after 17 years in the game. I feel like he truly doesn't like Usman. And I feel like he thinks when he beats Usman, because of course he's confident, then the McGregor fight will be there and it'll be even bigger because it will be for maybe two belts, right? The BMF belt and the real welterweight title, right? I just don't feel like he wants it. I'm not going to say that he blew it on Monday, because this is his career. He could do whatever he want. But when I thought that he was going to come on the show, I thought he was going to say, like, oh, you know, the shots about what I was wearing or how he looked and all that stuff. He just kind of said, like, you know, I'm over it. And I don't think Conor gave us any indication that he didn't want that fight. I don't think he dismissed it. I think he actually, you know, drew his ire and was calling him a mouthy fool and look at that bleeding house coat or whatever he called. I think he was down. I just don't feel like Masvidal wants it. And I hope it's very clear. I'm not saying he's afraid. I just think it really means a lot to him to get that welterweight title and to beat up Usman. For whatever reason, he doesn't like the guy. And so at this point, like, I don't want to keep banging that drum. I don't want to keep forcing him to want something that he doesn't really want. And I think that there's other fights that Conor wants too. And I think this idea, why I'm voting for Nate, is twofold. This idea that he's the old Conor, but a better version of the old Conor, to me, Nate falls into that narrative. All right, Cerrone called me out in 2015. There you go, off the list. Nate, you know, beat me and then took me to the brink. There you go, off the list. Now who's next? And so I feel like it brings back those memories. It brings back the old Conor, quote unquote. And then why I like this more than Gaethje, I don't want, I'll just say it, like I said it to Kavanaugh, I don't want Ali involved in this fight. And it has nothing to do with how I feel about him. Everyone knows my relationship with him, that he doesn't let fighters come on my show. It has nothing to do with that. I could not care less. Look, I'm saying Usman Masvidal, that's a massive fight for Usman. The point is, I think it brings out the worst in Conor. You saw the way he was talking about the Usman tweets on Saturday. I don't want to go down the Khabib path. If I'm trying to craft what is best for him right now, if we're playing that game, I don't want to go the Khabib path where Ali is a player, where he's doing the tweets and all that stuff. Nate and him have that respect. They have that admiration, but they also have the rivalry. I think if we're trying to craft the next best step in this comeback in this quote unquote season, he's the one that makes the most sense for all those reasons.
You sparked a lot there. I have two things. Let me backtrack for a second to Masvidal. If you think about Masvidal's last year, right? Every time he either called a shot or somebody was calling a shot at him, it was very direct, right? Like he wanted Darren Till. He earmarked that and he got it and he made the most of that opportunity. Then it was Ben Askren. And those two were very clearly on a collision course and calling each other out. Then Nate Diaz gets on the mic and calls him out. Everything was very direct, mm-hmm. very calculated, very methodical. This Conor McGregor wishy-washy leaving the options open thing, I think, is what's frustrating Masvidal. I don't necessarily think Conor McGregor moved on from it. Certainly, he left the door open. But I think Masvidal has been used to, this is my fight. And I think he had Conor McGregor in his mind as that fight. And when McGregor didn't engage in that way, when McGregor didn't go all in on fighting Masvidal, I think it's frustrating. And I think he's thrown off a little bit because the last year went that way. The last year was every single thing that Masvidal wanted or somebody wanted to fight him and he was game for it. It happened. It all happened the way he wanted it. And 2019 was fantastic for him. Conor McGregor's not playing that game. Conor McGregor is leaving his options open and he's gonna choose who he wants to fight and when he wants to fight. And I don't think Masvidal's down for that game. He's used to going at a certain
and
way.
And I don't think Conor's down for that game too. That's why I predicted on the pre-fight show, which I'm sure you heard, everyone heard on ESPN Radio 3 hours, et cetera, et cetera. They asked me, who's Conor going to call out? Who do you want him to call out? I said, no one.
Yeah.
Conor's above calling people out. He doesn't do that. He's
a businessman.
Yes. You come to me and I'll figure it out. All of you bend and all that stuff. By the way, in case you missed it, this is what Jorge Masvidal had to say on Monday when I asked him, who do you want more, Usman or McGregor?
I make a considerable larger paycheck with Conor.
Yeah.
But if it's on the personal side, if it's all potatoes and tomatoes mean the same, I would take a lot more pleasure in dismantling Usman's face than I would Conor's. I would have a sincere joy inside of me, like a kid on Christmas opening numerous gifts if Usman was the dude that I got to baptize.
Why is that?
Definitely. There's something about his face, I don't like it. It doesn't sit well with me. I don't like his attitude as well either. Little comments of who I've been doing this 16 fucking years. I'm the fighter of the year and I'm at your fucking weight class and you're going to be as corny and a petty ass troll and say who. I'm going to fuck his ass up, man.
Masvidal Usman is the fight to make at 170 if there was no Conor, right? Like if there was no Conor factor, that's the fight to make. We would all agree, correct?
It would have happened. It would have been booked already.
Right.
If Conor wasn't in play, this is a done deal.
So it's not like we're just saying, oh, you know, he can't get the Conor fight, so this is your consolation prize. We know that Edwards and Wilder are going to fight in March. One would expect by the time March rolls around that they will have already booked Usman's next fight for maybe, you know, June or so. So then maybe Edwards Woodley could get the winner, especially if it's Leon Edwards. So you book that fight and now you're left with Conor. I almost feel like that's what they want and that's what everyone wants. Just look at the way he's talking about Usman. Listen to him. He wants to beat this guy up. And I'm not saying he doesn't want the Conor fight, but I don't feel like it's giving him that fire right now that the Usman fight is giving him because of the belt and because he doesn't like him.
Yeah. And this goes back to what I was just saying. Like it seems like Usman kind of not, you know, calling your shot until this point. I know on Twitter yesterday, he kind of did finally say like, this is what's going to happen is also frustrating, Jorge.
Yes.
It feels like he's just not getting the king treatment that he probably deserved after last year. And make no mistake, like his star, is one of the brightest out there. Unfortunately for him, the brightest star just came back and all eyes are on Conor McGregor. But I do think ultimately Usman versus Masvidal is the fight to make and a fantastic one. But if Conor wants it, I got no problem with Masvidal and McGregor. And then on your point about Ali Abdelaziz and Conor McGregor, would it not, though, make sense, and just come with me here for a second, would it not, though, make sense to kind of have that be attached to the Usman fight as opposed to, let's say, he fights somebody else and then jumping right back into that whole can of worms with Ali when he deals with the Khabib fight, which we know at this point, based on what he's saying, based on what the UFC is saying, is nearly inevitable, right? That is the fight that everybody, should Conor make have a win in his next fight. All signs are pointing toward that fight being made toward the end of the year. Should it not be almost like I don't know if I'd call it a trial run, but just re-exposing him to that kind of environment versus throwing him straight back into it when it's with all the tension that comes with Khabib and Ali Abdelaziz on the other side of that?
So this is your case for Usman next?
My case for either Usman or Gaethje.
I think if I'm crafting his career, Usman's my last choice. Number one, bad style matchup, right? Champ at 170, but also, you know, a wrestler who's going to try to take him down. I don't think the fan. Did you see when they put Usman on the screen on Saturday?
Yeah, the fans are not into that. And
they didn't even react.
I'm not talking about it from a fight perspective. I'm more talking because, let's be real, Conor's going to choose who he wants to choose. If he decides it's Usman, it's Usman. I'm talking about it from the perspective that you mentioned. You don't want Ali Abdelaziz involved in this. But the reality is his end of year is very likely to have Ali Abdelaziz involved in this on the side with Habib. It is going to be Habib versus Conor if all things go according to plan.
How dare you disrespect Tony Ferguson like that? Can I just talk about this for a second?
Sure.
What did Tony Ferguson do to all you people? Even Dana White. I mean, could you imagine if you're Tony Ferguson at home in Orange County, you've got like six chairs stacked up, you're about to go through a workout, and you're listening to the president of the company talk about how, by the way, Habib versus Conor, you know, with no belt on the line is a big deal.
Yeah.
Conor's bigger than any belt. You agree?
100%.
No one cares. No one cares that there was no belt on the line on Saturday.
It's easy to forget, but Conor McGregor actually invented the belt before Nate Diaz did.
Okay. That being said, it does add a little something if it's Khabib for the belt, you know, retribution, all that stuff and more. But like Ferguson is fighting. Are we saying he has zero chance? Is he a total scrub?
I think what we're saying is Conor versus Khabib transcends that. And I think that's fair to say. I think that belt or no belt, that fight transcends whatever is happening in the goings on of the division. And it's no disrespect to Tony. If Tony wins the fight, I think plans change.
If Tony wins the fight, you're telling me you don't want to see Conor versus Tony with the backstory of him leaving the management team and feeling disrespected, like they kept him away. That's
very
much
so.
Big fight.
It's just not as big as Habib and Conor. And I think, you know, it's essentially being stated as Conor versus Habib if all goes according to plan. And I don't think that's any disrespect
to
Tony.
I don't hear that caveat. Or maybe if he wins.
It's implied.
Disrespect.
Mm.
If I'm Tony, I'm pissed.
Sure. I mean, and that's a good storyline. If you're Tony and you upset Habib, you say, where do you go now, McNuggets? Like, it's time to fight. I think it sells itself. So I would be down for that fight. But I do think if all goes according to plan, Conor versus Habib is the collision course. And I would say maybe it's not best to jump straight into that. Maybe there is some kind of, you know, having to deal with the mental turmoil of seeing somebody who's managing a manager in Ali Abdelaziz. And maybe we're making too much of this altogether. But he manages Justin Gaethje. He manages Kamaru Usman. Let's see what that kind of bad blood turns into.
Can I tell you the other thing that is worrying me a little bit? I don't want to say worrying me, but I feel like it's a really interesting puzzle right now because we know what the February pay-per-view main event is, Jones-Reyes, right? We know what the March pay-per-view main event is, Adesanya-Romero. We know what the April pay-per-view main event is, Khabib-Ferguson. We know that they're going to Brazil in May, and they're trying to do Cejudo-Aldo, which I wrote about today on ESPN.com. You can check that out. Still makes me a little bit ill inside and gives me a headache, but whatever. And then we get to June, and then we get to July. Now, his team keeps saying, oh, of course, we're going to be back before the summer. Well, I feel like June is kind of the summer. I think June 21st technically is the beginning of summer, but you get the point. Unless they're going to actually make a new pay-per-view for him, which they did for this one, worth noting, this wasn't supposed to be a show. The year was supposed to start January 25th in Raleigh, North Carolina. Where are they going to make this fight? Because they're not putting him on the April card. For that matter, they're not putting him on the same card as any other champion. Why? Because Conor draws more pay-per-views than anyone. Champions get a cut of pay-per-view, and they don't want to pay the champion because of what Conor is doing. I don't even know if Conor wants to give, you know, some other champion, you know, a piece of his pie, so to speak. So where are they going to make this fight? I feel like June, July makes the most sense. Last I heard, June is Australia. Definitely not going there. So now we're talking International Fight Week.
The team seems to be saying, and he seems to be saying, he'll be back before the summer. So if I was a betting man, my money would be on a pay-per-view being created.
So they just create one.
Yeah.
But then there's the other thing. It's like if you're going to put a pay-per-view the same month as, say, Khabib Ferguson, a second one, now you're almost hurting that pay-per-view, right? You're bastardizing
that one in May.
Now you're really killing that May one because people are still going to buy Khabib. There's an interesting thing that's going on here. When do you actually make – I mean, let's be honest. Good problem to have,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's a nice problem to have.
It's a really good problem.
When do we
problem?
Make the most money we're going to make this year?
Yeah, but I'm really curious when he's going to fight and who he's going to fight. The other thing is there anyone we're leaving off? I think we've all whittled it down to like three legit contenders, right? Masvidal, Gaethje, Nate. Is there anyone we're forgetting?
No, I don't think there's anybody we're forgetting, especially when Audie is bringing up Jose Aldo. I think all options have been...
You guys haven't mentioned Colby Covington.
Oh, stop it. Someone actually wrote to me about Colby yesterday, and it would be fun, but I think no one is clamoring for that at all.
I'll let Troy handle that one.
Yeah.
You guys clearly don't know what good entertainment is.
God.
He needs at least one win to even be in that discussion, and I don't think from us that I just don't think any. I mean,
there's no upside for Conor McGregor to fight Colby Covington.
No,
but no, I think those are the options, right? Like,
I guess we have to bring up Floyd. We don't have to bring up Floyd. It's not going to happen. I'm not saying it's never going to happen, but I'm not saying next. That's a very. If he wants to come back before the summer, that's a very tricky one, a very complex one. I don't see it. And I'll just say maybe I'm putting my own thoughts into this. I don't want it to happen.
Yeah.
That's when everything got off track.
We just talked about how there's not really a slot for a MMA pay-per-view.
Oh, please God.
All of a sudden it opens up the idea that, Manny Pacquiao has been talked about all week.
Am I crazy to think that I actually like the Pacquiao fight more than the Floyd fight just because it's something different and Manny's probably less...
No, 100%. It seems like it would certainly be more competitive with all due respect to Pacquiao, who's now holding a belt again at 40-plus years old. I mean, the guy's incredible. But no, we saw the Floyd fight, and in my estimation, I know many people have different opinions on that fight, he carried Conor to the late rounds and then decided when he was going to knock him out. I did not think that was a competitive fight at all, and I think some people have given a lot of credit to Conor for making it that far. I don't. I think Floyd carried him entirely. And opted to turn the off button on when he did. So no, I do not want to see that again. I think Floyd Mayweather is probably as sharp as ever. Doesn't look any older or slower or different than he did in his fighting prime, which is incredible. So no, not interested in Floyd versus Conor. But you could talk me into Manny versus Conor.
Yeah, but not next.
There's nothing available before the summer, Ariel.
Well, they still have to create something. I mean, it's still a business move for the UFC because you still don't want to bastardize your pay-per-views.
There's no MMA fights before the summer.
Oh, they can make one.
There's no slots.
Listen, I'm down with it in 3-4 fights. Let's say he wins the lightweight belt again, and then he wins the welterweight belt. Fine, but again, as I've said a million times, I want to see the best do what they're best at. And he's best at MMA. He's an 0-1 pro boxer with no amateur career. As fun as it would be, like, don't get me wrong, covering Mayweather-McGregor was maybe the most fun I've ever had in my life, in my entire career. Actually, this past week might be a close second because that was a lot of fun. I want to see him versus Nate. I want to see him versus Masvidal. I want to see him versus Gaethje. I want to see the Khabib rematch if we get to there. True or false, this time next year, so January of 2021, is Conor a champion in mixed martial arts?
Nope.
There's
no path in my mind to that. Okay. He does not beat Kamaru Usman. He does not beat Masvidal. He does not beat Khabib. So, or Tony Ferguson. So
you don't think he beats Ferguson?
No.
Really?
No.
If Ferguson beats Khabib, you don't think he has a chance?
You just talked about the disrespect. I will not disrespect Tony Ferguson. Okay, yeah. I think he is elite. I think he is the number two behind Khabib, and I think Khabib is the number one overall. I think he's the best fighter on the planet. John Jones? Yeah, John Jones. So he's the second best fighter on the planet. And Tony Ferguson somewhere up there. So, no, I could he? Sure. I think Tony leaves himself open and is wild enough to give Conor opportunities. But do I think he would be favored in any of those matchups? I don't.
Okay. Last thing. Favorite part of last week?
Favorite part of last week? Is this a trick question?
No.
If I don't say something?
I'm putting you on the spot. I mean, listen, with your job, breaking the fourth wall, you get to be behind the scenes. You get to be backstage. You were there for the majority of the week. It's just different. Like, we are very lucky. I was talking to Chael Saturday. We're on the desk doing the pre-show. And again, thank you to everyone who watched our stuff, listened to our stuff. Your numbers on Instagram and Twitter, the ESPN MMA account, you guys crushed it. Like, we are very lucky to do this. Is our job. Like, sometimes, we'll say, oh, we got to travel, be away from our family. But like, to be at a Conor fight, these are the stories that we'll be telling our family about. These are great moments in the history of the sport. The way people talk about 2015, 2016, I think a lot of us thought we'd never get back to that. And I don't want to say that beating Cerrone is like beating Aldo or beating Mendez, but it felt like the closest we've been to that, right? Or the Alvarez fight. And so it was cool. It was fun. It was fun to cover that. You know, there's often events where you're like, yeah, this kind of event is a little flat, or it doesn't have the juice, or it doesn't have the buzz, and the ticket sales aren't that great, and the crowd is dead, and the crowd is empty. There's nothing to complain about the whole week, from the presser to even like Monday, you know, doing the sit down with him and all that stuff. The whole week was just, I thought, one good thing after the next. It was nothing to be upset about, to criticize. Getting to go to the Apex, the UFC Apex for media day, that was really cool to be there for the first time. I thought the other fighters, you know, there was so much to talk about with Macy and Roxanne and the return of Holly Holm and Diego Fajed. It was just a great week. Was there anything that stood out?
It's a small moment, but it was the moment after Conor McGregor won, getting 20 text messages talking about, did you see that, what happened, that type of thing, because it's been a long time since that happened. It's been a long time, and only Conor McGregor does that to people. Now, I couldn't answer them because I was working at the moment, but it was nice to see, and it kind of confirmed my belief that Conor McGregor is a one of one and didn't lose any juice. And if anything, this brought people back into the tent. So it was that moment. It was that moment. I couldn't help but smirk and smile to myself, thinking that, to cite the cliche, like, old Conor is back.
Yeah.
Old Conor is back. It was that moment, right after he finished Donald Cerrone.
Yeah, and we'll see, you know, just how back he is. But for now, again, we couldn't have gotten any better. And getting to do the locker room interview for me was a lot of fun. Those locker room interviews are the best before they get dressed. Still sweaty and all that stuff. You get the raw emotion. He was a little emotional talking about coming back, talking about his mother, who we certainly hope gets well soon. And she is a legend, Megs. And of course, Tony McGregor was there. It was nice to see him. So it was just cool. And part of the story is, how does Cerrone rebound? I do hope that he takes some time off. I do think that he has been very active and has taken a lot of damage over the past year. So for his sake, and also, you know, also a legend of this game, I do hope that he's able to enjoy that money he made, take the time off. And to anyone who says that fight was fixed, I mean, you should be absolutely embarrassed, and you're only just exposing your own stupidity, because that was just, I mean, there was nothing fixed about that fight. Please stop. That's the one negative byproduct of a Conor fight. You get a lot of mainstream fans that watch, and if it doesn't go their way, or if the guy they bet on, I should say, loses, they say it was fixed. That was rigged. It wasn't rigged. Stop it. It's annoying. It's just annoying. It's just so weak. It's like the laziest of all the takes. Stop it. Anyway, I'm done. New York Rick, thank you for the time as always.
Thank you, my friend.
All right, now let's move along to our next guest and get the Irish perspective as far as Conor McGregor's triumphant return is concerned. He was in Las Vegas. It was great to see him for the first time in what felt like years, 5 years, 6 years. My old mate, my old pal, my old Mojada himself, or Mojada. I don't know. I always mess that up. The one and only P.T. Carroll of MMAfighting.com and the host of my favorite MMA podcast, Eurobash. P.T., what's the crack?
How's it going, Ariel? How are you? Thanks for having me on, boss.
Yes, it's a pleasure. And you're on vacation right now at some undisclosed location, so I really appreciate you taking some time out of your day. My apologies to Elaine, by the way, for ruining the vacation. But I really wanted to get your side of the story here, because a big storyline heading into this fight, of course, was the Irish fans. Had they turned on him? Do they feel the same about him? Would they support him if he won and, you know, and behaved the right way, and the aftermath was handled the right way? Would they get back on his bandwagon? All that stuff and more. And so several days later, around four or so days later, could you tell me, how do the Irish fans feel about what Conor McGregor did on Saturday?
Yeah, there's been a big surge in, you know, just general interest, support. Like, it really felt like a completely different attitude when I stepped off the plane on Tuesday back into the country. You know, when I was going away, a lot of people were telling me they didn't even know this fight was on. But by the time that fight started on Saturday night, everybody was watching. Honestly, like, I mean, the amount of people that were still awake, 6 a.m., whatever it was, 5:30 to 6 a.m., in Ireland, it was unbelievable. And my dad, the first thing my dad said, he picked me up from the airport, he said, oh, that was funny when he said that to Jorge Masvidal about the dressing gown. Like, it feels like everything's landing again for Conor. Not only his shots, but his jokes. Everything seems to be going down well with a lot of people that didn't seem interested at all when I was leaving the country.
Are you surprised by this?
No, I felt like it was always going to be the test of it on fight night. Like, I mean, we even were talking way before this event went down about the time where we were standing outside the second Nate Diaz press conference going, oh, there's not a lot of talk about this. And then, of course, the famous missile throwing press conference and the whole world was locked in then. I feel like it was actually that redemption story that really sold, though, here. Like, I felt like that's what people were tuning in to see. Could this guy come back? Could this guy look as good as he did on Saturday night? And it was a real home run from Conor in terms of how he acted all week and his performance. And I think that warmed him to the Irish people as well. You'll remember at 2-2-9, it was really ugly. It was really sour. And I felt as though that was the kind of... The build-up to that fight was the kind of thing that would, you know, make people think less of Conor in some ways. And then the performance came after and, you know, he wasn't able to redeem himself properly. Like, all the things he was saying in the lead-up to the fight, it felt like Saturday's performance was like the physical manifestation of him redeeming himself, you know, getting back to winning ways. And that's certainly how it... I think a lot of people feel anyway. Look, it's not the whole country. There's a lot of people that still he still needs to win back, and that's going to take a lot of time. But look, the only way he can go now is back into the old McGregor territory where people start to doubt him, and that's where he's at his best, you know. Because if he's matched with Masvidal or Habib, there's going to be lots of people like Gaethje, whoever it is. I heard John talking about that on your show. Like, whoever it is, there's going to be a lot of people who think the other guy is going to win. And that's where the old McGregor, the prime McGregor, used to shine. So I'm very interested to see what happens next.
One of the interesting debates leading up to Saturday night was, is he being authentic? You know, is this all an act? Is it all PR? Or is he really just happy to be there, grateful to be back, appreciative of the moment? His demeanor reminded me a lot of the early days leading up to Brimage, leading up to Brandao, just sort of not as aggressive, charming at times. You know, the lines were just kind of coming out. The, you know, blood would be spilled, but not bad blood, all that stuff. He seemed to be in good spirits, even tardy at the weigh-ins, but then apologizes for his tardiness afterwards. It was just all very charming. It wasn't heavy. It wasn't controversial. It was all the things that I think you would agree he needed to do. But one of the debates was, and I had this debate with Chael and Bisping, and they didn't believe it. They felt it was fabricated. They didn't feel like it was authentic. Is this the real guy? Is this truly who he is? Did you feel like this was real, or did you feel like it was calculated? Did you feel like they huddled up and said, all right, this is how we're going to win fans over. We're going to have to act this way.
Well, I don't know if he was like, oh, I have to win the fans over. But you can tell that this guy is trying to change his ways. Like, there's no doubt about it. He's referenced to you that, you know, he has a life coach now in Tony Robbins. And, you know, he's mentioned that the people around him have lifted him up. Like, I don't care if it's an act at this stage. If he can come in and do this 3 times a year and act that way, like, this is him getting used to a new thing as well, or trying to change something. So as long as he keeps doing it, I don't care if he's making a concerted effort to do it or not. I just think this is the way we need to see him. This is the way that really makes the Irish people care about him again, that can reverberate with the nation. So really, like, whether it's a forced thing or not, I don't think it matters. He just needs to keep doing it. I'd much rather see this every single time than what we saw in the lead-up to the Habib fight. You know, I think, like, it doesn't really bother me where it's coming from, as long as it's, like, it is this way, you know?
You noted something on Twitter afterwards. He did a brief interview with RTE, which is the Irish national broadcaster. And I was actually surprised. I didn't see them there leading up to the fight, but I saw them at the post-fight press conference, and he did a brief interview with them after the post-fight press conference. And you said that, you know, you hope that he speaks to the Irish media more. He has not spoken to them actively over the years. Were you surprised that RTE was there? I didn't think for this one. I thought maybe they would, you know, slowly, you know, build their way back up. Were you surprised that RTE, I mean, I don't know, in Canada, I would compare them to CBC. I mean, they are the national broadcaster in Ireland. And correct me if I'm positioning them the wrong way. Were you surprised that they covered this, considering all the talk that people weren't as interested in them? And why do you think it is important that he continues to develop that relationship with them?
Well, I feel like, you know, on his way up, right, when he was raised up as this national figure and icon for my generation of people, I guess, he was always speaking directly to Ireland, whether it was on your show, in the middle of the octagon after he won the fight, whether it was the press conference and the lead-up to the fight, it was all so Irish. And it made it impossible for the Irish people not to back this guy. I felt like he didn't really, you know, ham up the Irish thing this time around until fight night, really. Like, he came out with the tricolour. He mentioned Ireland in the post-fight speech in the Octagon, then, of course, a lot in the post-fight press conference. Like, you'd be surprised at the amount of people that were like to me, oh, he was brilliant in the fight and he was brilliant in the press conference. Mm-hmm. You know, guys that were telling me that, oh, I'm not going to watch this fight, you know, they knew everything about what he said afterwards. They were nearly giving me a glossary of what happened at the press conference. You know what I mean? Like this is it. Like, people will watch every little bit of Conor if they're invested in him, you know? And that's the guy that's going to sell the most amount of things and mean the most amount to the people of the earth. Like, look, I don't think he really cares what everyone else in the world feels about him. But, like, you know, he does care about what the Irish people feel. Like, this is why I think, you know, he's come out and he's changed his ways. I think when you look back at the July 2014 thing in Dublin when he bet Brandel, like, that was the fight that launched 1,000 ships. People watching around the world seeing 10,000 Irish people sound like 50,000 people and losing their minds and clearly in awe of this guy. This is what made the UFC stand up and pay attention to him. Well, I'm sure a few things happened before that as well, but this was the real reason. This is when they realized that, you know, they had a global commodity on their hands, as far as I'm concerned. It was the Irish people that showed it to him. You know, so I feel as though that means a lot to him. And I think he's well on his way to getting them all back. There, of course, there needs to be a few issues resolved before a lot of people will fully get back in on the bandwagon. But I think it was a great first step into redeeming himself. If this was a story about redemption, he's certainly making his way there.
As far as the actual fight itself, his performance, I know it was very short, but were you impressed?
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I watched it again. I think the UFC released it in, like, a slow motion. Like, apart from that first big left hand, he connected with everything he threw. You know, like, it feels like everything landed. Like, even, I was very impressed by the way he hits Cerrone. After the head kick lands, Cerrone is hurtling to the canvas like a fast moving target, and Conor still clips him with the left hand on the way down. You know, like, look at everything he landed there, the knee to the head, the kick to the head, the shoulders, you know, very creative performance. I don't know how anyone could flaw him, you know, like, I don't know how anyone could say like that wasn't a really good showing from Conor. Like, he landed everything apart from that left hand was thrown with bad intentions. And you know, he absolutely dismantled Cerrone. Let's be honest, he obliterated him.
Yeah,
and I guess like that's why, like, he's going to run through, like, the way the Irish people are looking in. He's ran through this guy, but you know, if the other person is a name that's known, Masvidal, Habib, that's when like, you know, the doubt factor used to be a big thing for Conor, right? Because if he wasn't like trying to always like push his finger into the chest of the biggest bully in the playground and then actually beating them, it made it so magical, right? Like, everyone, nah, surely not this one, and then he does it. Like, surely not Mendes, that's the worst matchup, and then he does it. Oh, surely not Aldo, yeah, he does it. You know, Diaz coming back and winning that, unbelievable, 170, and then Alvarez, two titles. They were all like, you know, this is crazy, how is he doing this? And I think that's the way he needs to go next time. Like, he needs to have the odds stacked against him, and then to carry off a huge victory that make people go, oh my God, man, this guy is back. Like, could you imagine if he goes in and starts as Masvidal or he starts as Habib? Yeah. Like, I mean, we're right back to where it was at the start of his career. Like, I mean, it might be an uncomfortable situation for him being an underdog for the first time in a long time. And I don't even know if he, like, I mean, I come back and he's after beating Cerrone and people are like, that McGregor will beat Habib. And that's pretty crazy to me to say something like that, but that shows that another key component is back for Conor, and that's his power to make people believe. I said this to you for a long time. That's nearly one of the most amazing things about him. But at the height of his power, he'd just say something and everybody'd be like, yeah. Like, it wouldn't matter what it was. They right. Just go, absolutely, that's 100% true. And it's funny because that's exactly what I thought when about three people have said to me so far, like, that Conor will be Habib. And I'm like, this is, you know, it is crazy saying that from, like, October 2018, he's fought once against Bronson Cerrone, who is in that elite, like the very, very cream of the crop in that division, and they already think he's going to win. I think that's a testament to how he makes people feel and what he does to people, really.
And it's also amazing for all the talk that he had not won since November of 2016, That his last fight was in October of 2018, that people were turning on him, disgusted by him, all this stuff. $11 million gate, fourth highest in UFC history, a card that was cobbled together. Not a lot of promotion, right? I mean, we were starting to get nervous. When are the tickets going on sale? When are they actually going to acknowledge that this card is happening? And for him to do that in the midst of a busy time in sports, there's the NFL playoffs going on here in America, and for him to capture the attention of the world like that, you see people tweeting, you know, famous sports stars tweeting about him in the moment, you know, on the weekend. It's really truly impressive how one win can just get him right back on track. I would say he's right back to where he was leading into the Khabib fight. Like, he just feels that popular once again. And so now the big question is, who is next? And you know what's also amazing, just as a side note, like, how influential he is. Like, the shoulder strikes have now become the new Billy Strut. I saw the Dallas Mavericks.
I saw that.
You know, doing that. It's just amazing how, like, everyone just wants to imitate the guy and copy him. And, he didn't give us the Billy Strut because he felt like everyone was waiting for it. So he gave us something else. And very cool of Cathal Pendra to post a video on his Instagram of him doing that to him several years ago. I thought that that was fun as well. But the big question now is, and it's almost as fun as the fights themselves, you know, who does he fight next? The speculation, the debates, all that stuff. He can go in a million different directions, right? He's planted 10 different seeds. If you were in charge, if you were the man in charge, who are you booking him against next?
I just before I tell you who I book him against, isn't it great to see these stories out? You know, the fact that the stories that are about Conor at the moment were like, oh, is it going to be this one? Is it going to be this one? John said this. This guy said that. Like, this is the mania that was Conor at the height of his career. And it's not, oh, this guy in the bar, he broke this dude's phone. You know, it's like, oh, is Conor going to fight this guy and this guy? And I think that's brilliant, right? Like, this is really great that he does one press conference and we have 15 storylines that are being thoroughly explored rather than the negative stuff, you know what I mean? I feel as though, you see, look, I need to preface this with this. Some Irish people are telling me that Masvidal did not sell it very well on the broadcast. Now, I don't know if that's out of pure fandom for Conor, pure worship for Conor, because that's the effect he has on Irish people. It feels like he won that fight, he behaved himself all week, he had a great press conference, and now they're all completely hypnotized by the guy again. So I'm just saying what I've been told. They said that the Masvidal thing didn't come across well, and then, you know, everybody keeps talking about this joke that Conor told at the end where he said he was like an Irish granny. And Irish grannies wear these, grandmothers wear these dressing gowns, the Versace ones, while they're watching the TV. Like, you'd be surprised. Like, my dad said that to me. My uncle said it to me. A couple of my friends said it to me. They think this is hilarious. So I feel as though, that would be my favorite fight. As in, if I'm John Kavanagh, I'm looking at this fight going, right, we can have another great build-up to a fight here that possibly won't get into the murky stuff that I think is inevitable if he fights Khabib, right? Like, he's after having this wonderful press conference, wonderful week of PR, putting himself forward in the best possible manner, having a fantastic win, doing the same in the post-fight. Like, all this great stuff, all the people back on his side. You put him in the Khabib fight now, Dana White clearly wants it, and it's just going to go right down into the dredges again, I feel. I feel like these two have a poisonous relationship. The whole lead-up to that last camp was poison. You know, it was harsh stuff being said to each other. It didn't feel like a prize fight. It felt like a gang war or something. It was insane. So I feel as though Masvidal, we saw his build-up with Nate. It didn't rely on the two of them trash-talking or anything like that. And it's a fight that takes place within Conor's wheelhouse. It's a striking fight. I feel like Jorge's got all the juice right now. Conor might have taken it back on Saturday. But these are two huge names in the US, right? After Masvidal's 2019, and now Conor, as you said, becoming this cultural icon overnight again, it's really insane. But I feel like let's make hay while the sun shines, get those two fighting, and we can go from there. Like, but I do have to say, it might make sense to fight Nate now as well. I've seen Boss Logic putting out the poster that was really cool with the finger, etc. I think he's talking about March. I don't know if Nate's going to be ready for again, but it's a fight that makes sense. I feel like Nate is a step up Cerrone. He's beaten Cerrone. He has that great rivalry with Conor. And I feel like it's a more winnable fight than both Masvidal or Khabib right now. So maybe if he does beat Nate, then either Khabib or Masvidal can be what he finishes off the year with. Look, I think it's great that John Kavanagh said Justin Gaethje's name, because there's a huge segment of the fan base that no matter who you suggest, they're like, get angry because Justin Gaethje is not in the conversation. That's another fantastic fight. I have a feeling that will be a build-up full of vitriol based on some of the things Gaethje has been saying to Conor over the last while. And I think that's the only big reason that Conor doesn't want to fight him. The idea that Conor is kicking and choosing at this stage after getting back to winning ways, I think is a bit unfair. He was never known for that. Maybe Cerrone was a good way to get him back up and running, but I'd say from now on he's happy to do whatever. I do want Masvidal, but I'd say it could be Nate, and I'd be happy to see Gaethje. Any of them really, but my pick would be Masvidal.
Numbers and options, right? That's what the fight game is all about. He has the numbers, and now he has the options once again. There's a million different directions that he can go. All of those are great. As I said earlier in the show, I feel like the Masvidal train has left the station. I feel like the UFC wants Masvidal Usman. I feel like Usman wants Masvidal. I feel like Masvidal wants Usman. And the way he lit up when talking about Nathan, let's go, Nathan. Let's go, brada. Number three. Just felt like that was the one guy he actually kind of called out in the midst of it all. So we'll see how it all plays out. Always great to get your insight. As always, PT, tremendous work over at MMAfighting.com. The whole team is doing great stuff. Even Brian Kelleher gave you a shout out on Monday. Team Crystal, you and Jose Youngs. But it was truly great to see you back stateside covering a Conor fight. It felt like old times, and I hope that we could get back to those old times. Win or lose, I think, if you're being objective, it's just a lot more fun covering the sport when he is around, doing positive things, fighting. He doesn't have to win, but just fighting and not doing the other stuff. I think it's just more fun for all of us, for the fans, for the media, for the fighters. Everyone is just in a better place when the biggest star in the sport is around, and that's no different in the NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, etc. Thanks for the time, my man. We'll talk to you soon.
Just a quick note, Ariel.
Yes.
Just want to point this out. Last McGregor fight, I was at, what was it?
I think it was 202.
It was 205, Eddie Alvarez.
That's right.
Last time he won. I'll say no more.
All right.
That's all I need to say.
That's
leave it there.
Okay, there he is, the host of the Eurobash. Love that podcast. Check it out. And perhaps PT is the good luck charm. His last win, UFC 205 against Eddie Alvarez. He returns, almost 3.5 years later and gets that next win against Donald Cerrone Saturday night in Las Vegas.
TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week.
All right, Ariel.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
How's Vegas?
I enjoyed it a lot more the second time around.
Because your guy didn't get whooped.
Right. It was a lot of fun. I mean, I'd heard so many things about what to expect at a Conor McGregor fight, and it lived up to the hype. The build-up to the fight, after Holly Holm finished, the second that fight was done, the temperature in the room changed. You could feel the tension, the anticipation. Like, the UFC rolls out the metaphorical red carpet for Conor McGregor. They were changing the lights into the colors of the Irish flag. The Irish music got everyone so hyped. It was exciting. I loved being there. And then the knockout, of course, the place went wild. It was so cool to see in person.
Did it live up to the hype?
I mean, I think it did. Like Eric, a lot of people texted me immediately after the fight. Did you see that? Hey, I know you're there. I'm sorry it only lasted 40 seconds. And I'm like, no, like that was great.
Yes.
Like, I don't care that it only lasted 40 seconds. Yes, you would like to see, a bigger sample size just to see for the future how he looks at welterweight. But to see that end at 40 seconds, the way he did just to be in command from start to end, it was sick. I'm not going to lie. Like, it was sick. I don't care that it ended prematurely.
Yeah. I feel like most people who are there even felt like they got their money's worth. All right, what's the tip?
Okay, so this is something that I have tried to integrate into my life the past few weeks. So we all have our to-do list. I don't know if you're a to-do list guy, Ariel, but I'm a big to-do list guy. And a thing I've noticed is that we like to put really small tasks on our to-do list, things that we know we can get done because we're all wired to feel like we're being productive all the time. We love the feeling of being productive, and that if we're being productive, getting things done, crossing off the list, then we're having a good day. We're doing what we're supposed to do. But what I have noticed is that those small tasks, those easy tasks are often what we do first to get them out of the way because they don't require much mental capacity. And the tougher tasks, the ones that we really should be dedicating our time to, the more creative tasks, whether it's you want to read, you want to write, you have to come up with ideas for things, for work or for whatever it is, we often leave those on the back burner because we're just secretly avoiding them. And we don't want to use the brain power. We'd rather feel productive and get stuff done rather than maybe dedicate our time and focus to one singular task. So what I recommend is those hardest things on your to-do list that you have to do that require more brain power, you have to bring yourself to do those first. For me personally, I do these things in the morning. This is when, you know, I wake up super early, around like 5 a.m. Eastern. So I try to front load the things that I want to do, my creative projects that I feel will make me better so that I can be uninhibited before text messages, emails, work things start coming in. I dedicate my time, my me time in the morning to those things. So if there are things out there that you guys want to do in the spirit of minimalism and making changes in your life and focusing on the important things, I strongly recommend that you front load your day with those important projects, creative tasks that you feel will make you better.
Great advice. In fact, when I came back from Las Vegas, because I was away for so long, I felt like I had a lot that was piling up. So I did write down all the things that I needed to do. And yesterday, when I got through most of them, stuff not related to the job, bills, whatever, I felt a lot better when I went to bed. Like when I went to bed on Monday, I felt anxious. So I wrote them all down. And then Tuesday night when I went to bed, I felt a lot better. So it's something I'm going to start doing. And I didn't even know that this was going to be your tip of the week. How about that?
How about that?
Yeah, we're in sync.
It's a big game changer. I mean, I think we just love feeling like we're productive, like we're getting things done. And, you know, often, yes, we are getting things crossed off our to-do list, you know, like paying the bills, these tasks that like don't require much thinking beyond, you know, pressing a few buttons. We often, especially around New Year's, we say there's all these things that want to do. And then when we finally sit down to do it, you know, at 7 o'clock p.m., it's like, my brain's tired, long day, I'll do it tomorrow. And then it's just a vicious cycle that keeps happening.
Any reviews?
We do have a review. We have some very positive reviews.
Ooh.
So we've got two. The first one here comes from Young C.
Okay.
5-star review. The Golden Standard of MMA Journalism is the title. There is absolutely no question about it. Ari Helwani is and has been the premier MMA reporter for years with no sign of comparable competition in sight.
Thanks, Mom. That wasn't my mom. It felt like
Mama knows. Yes. She's a good Twitter follow. I saw her on Twitter the other day, and I was considering giving her a follow, but then I saw that she hasn't tweeted in like 3 years.
Wow, you didn't just follow her for the sake of following her?
I didn't, but Mama knows. I know you're listening to this because you listen to everything. Yes. So tweet me something compelling, or tweet at me.
Okay.
At Troy_Farkas, and we can have a little dialogue here. I have some things to say about your son.
Okay.
Next one comes from Meg Chapter. Best MMA show ever. 5 stars. Ariel is the best interviewer, always asks the questions we want to know, is nice, and makes all his guests comfortable! Exclamation point. I look forward to all of his episodes and all of his different shows. Great guests, as always. Love you, Ariel, with 10 exclamation points. Wow. I'm a UFC super fan.
I love it. Keep them coming. Good for my ego. I appreciate it. Continue to rate, subscribe, review, download, all those things and more. Good to be back on a Wednesday here in New York. Last week, we're in the radio booth in Las Vegas. People like the calls too. Maybe we could figure out a way of doing that more. Maybe we should be on ESPN radio every week, dare I say. Maybe we should be on every day, TST. We had 3 hours last week on Saturday. We had an hour on Wednesday, 4 hours total. I kind of feel like with the return of Conor McGregor, there's a lot to talk about these days in MMA. And of course, we didn't even get into UFC Raleigh, JDS, Curtis Blades. What about Rafael Dos Anjos against Michael Chiesa? What about Bellator this Saturday? They're going head-to-head. The debut of Chris Cyborg against Julia Budd? A lot to talk about there. Aaron Pico, full camp with Jackson Wink. How's he going to look? And then we get into February with John Jones and Dominic Reyes. There's a lot going on, as always. But everyone's thinking, everyone's talking about Conor. I feel like we dissected the aftermath from all angles. Will his next fight be at 170? We don't know. Who will his next opponent be? We don't know. When will he return? We don't know. But what's fun about the whole thing is it's fun to speculate. It's fun to debate. It's fun to digest, dissect, all those things and more. So we appreciate Pete C. Carroll for stopping by. Great to have him on as always. Thank you very much to the great New York Rick for stopping by. Thank you, TST. Thanks to all of you for doing what you do. We appreciate your support more than you know. I'm off to Miami, by the way.
back on the sidelines this Friday. Heat Clippers. What a matchup. Heat 19-1 at home. What does Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, if he plays, think about all of that? By the way, I'm going to be doing a fun thing on the broadcast where I'm comparing five of the Clippers' best players to UFC stars. You're going to love it. It's going to be great. And I may be appearing on a certain really popular ESPN radio show in studio on Friday, which just so happens to tape in Miami. That's the word. More on that later. For now, though, I'm out of time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for subscribing. All that and more. I love you. I'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the fights.